recorded live.
Welcome to Best Interest of the Family Radio. I'm Dave Taylor, joined with my good buddy, Larry Heron, the parent coach. Hey,
Dave. How are you, sir?
I'm good. I had a terrific weekend with you and Dee.
It was a good weekend. Dave, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, I'm not sure why. We were breaking up there for a minute. Going back to the weekend, what a phenomenal time. We took the kids camping, and we really roughed it in a heated cabin. And
Well, everybody else was roughing it and getting frostbitten in their tents. We managed to get ourselves a little cabin with a heater in it. That was all good.
You know, Dave, I think we're getting old, but I don't know. We got some different kids too. They were lobbying for cabins as well.
Oh, they love the bunk beds. You know that.
Yeah, no doubt. And I got to say, Dave, you surprised me a little bit up there at the Renaissance Festival. You seem to know your way around that era a little bit.
Well, you know, it was really funny because I was telling you that a couple months ago when I was walking in there, you know, there was a guy with a kilt on, you know, how they like to dress up at, you know, the Renaissance garb. And at the time, I actually was, I have to admit, I was a little dressed up myself. And what was really funny is I look at this great, big, burly, red-headed Scotsman wearing plaid kilt, and I expressed to him, I said, "Oh, men in skirts." And he goes, "Oh, men in tights." It was just funny. So everybody takes it, you know, they take it well up there, and everybody has a lot of fun. You know, everybody's chewing on these great big turkey legs, and, you know, there's always somebody flailing swords and, you know, making some interesting comments at each other that that can only be made at the Renaissance Festival. That's for sure.
Absolutely.
And only understood at the Renaissance Festival.
You know, I want to throw this out to parents, too. I'm not sure if it has anything to do with the turkey leg, but those turkey legs are definitely big enough for two. I ordered one, and DJ got the chicken nuggets and French fries, but he was, after he got one bite of my turkey leg, he pretty much chowed. He thought that was about the best thing he ever had. And sure enough, Dave, 6:35 p.m., that boy was out. He slept all the way home and all the way through the night, and I'm pretty sure that turkey leg had something to do with it. So. It might be a good way to go if you got a romping 7-year-old. I'd get the turkey leg.
Well, there you go.
But
Larry, do you have some other extracurricular activity going on in the background there?
I do not. I heard that too, so I'm not sure what that
I
is.
I do.
That might be our guest.
We'll let her slide. We'll bring her on here a little bit. She'll be able to make some more noise, only in a positive light on her campaign. I'll tell you what, Larry. Again, we had a splendid time with you and DJ. You know, we got to do a lot of activities over there at the campground, and I know the biggest joy that we have as parents is you know, gleaning those moments that we have with our kids. And I know, speaking for myself anyway, that's the biggest joy I have personally as a parent is living vicariously through my almost 10-year-old daughter.
No question about it. Well, you know, Dave, it's important because we're creating lifetimes of traditions and lifetimes of character and personality traits and all kinds of other things through the moments that we spend with them and the routines and traditions that we share with them now in places like campgrounds and cabins and Renaissance festivals and the activity that we do and the memories we leave them with, those are the legacies. As I've said, you heard me say 100,000 times, and I'll say it 100,000 more. It's the greatest legacy a parent can leave is just being a parent, just being there for your kids. And that's certainly what we're doing. And it was fun. It was a lot of fun to watch our kids, to watch them interact with them. And it was a great time. It truly was.
Well, but let's face it, Larry, you know, we're not on here to pontificate about our own experiences with our kids, even though it, you know, of course, we're happy to do that because we want to tell people how, you know, thankful we are that we have a relationship with our kid. But unfortunately, what has occurred in our society, as you well know, is a number of parents have been disenfranchised from their kids and vice versa. And, you know, it's very disheartening knowing that, you know, there's a number of folks that listen to this program that are in, you know, literally uphill battles to stay in the lives of their kids and to be that daily or weekly or an influence at all in the lives of their kids. You know, if it wasn't for educational programs like this and organizations like Dads and Moms of Michigan and the like, you know, unfortunately, in my opinion anyway, the society would be, you know, plummeting to a whole new level of, unfortunately, where, you know, we would have, you know, parentless kids at some point.
No question. Essentially, you know, education is of the utmost importance. We've got to get out there and understand that kids need both parents. Kids need a whole and complete relationship with each parent. And as you say, those groups and advocacy and other networks, educating everybody, parents and kids and systems and all alike, you know, that's what kids need and how to be there and why it's important. And the reforms that are needed and the understanding that, look, kids need you to spend time. They need more than talk. They need more than lip service. They need time. And that's what we're doing, and we're happy to do so.
Well, and they need more than a McDad or a McMom.
No doubt.
You know, and unfortunately, that's many times what occurs by no fault of parents or the children. And, again, hopefully through educational means like Biff Radio, you know, folks will be downloading this that can really truly make a difference. Those that work in the Friend of the Court or CPS or DHS or a judge. In fact, tonight, Larry, I'm really excited to have a candidate for judge who actually did splendid, won her primary for probate judge here in Oakland County. None other than Kathleen Ryan. Anybody that's interested in her campaign can go to elect Kathleen, that's Kathleen Ryan, Ryan.com, electkathleenryan.com. And gosh, I just pulled up her website a little while ago, Larry, and amazing the information that she has on her website. She has information about what a probate judge does. We'll get into some of that. She's got information on there about, you know, her endorsements, and she's got a number of endorsements. We'll go into that in a little bit. When we bring Kathleen on, you know, gosh, we had her on the show before, very impressive lady. She's working real hard to get out and get the vote for Oakland County residents. And I understand through the grapevine just today, Larry, heard through that Bill Bullard, the chairman of Oakland County Commissioners, announced that the Republican Party in Oakland County is endorsing Kathleen Ryan's candidacy for
endorsement. That's quite an endorsement. Well, as you're saying, Kathleen is quite a lady. There's no question that she brings some very impressive qualifications to the table. And you know, Dave, I think that the voters out here really need to be informed on what a probate judge does and the importance of electing that particular official, because a lot of times, you know, we think about the governor, we think about a congressman, a senator, and we think those are really the only positions we really need to think about and make an informed decision. I don't think that the average citizen realizes just how close to home, for example, a probate judge is to their every daily life.
Well, absolutely.
That's an extremely important position to consider. The decisions that are made on that bench in probate court will affect your life more immediately, oftentimes, and more profoundly than any congressman, senator, or even governor can even begin to. So we're excited to have her on and to learn more about her candidacy and her views and certainly as we're talking about what a probate judge does.
Well, at the very least, we want to give her a huge congratulations for such a decisive win in the primary. With that said, welcome to Biff Radio, Kathleen.
Thank you so much. Hi, Larry. Hi, Dave. Thanks for having me tonight. I appreciate it.
Oh,
thanks for the great shout out. I'm flattered. I'm humbled. I'm thrilled, and I'm grateful. Thank you.
Well, and we're delighted to have you on tonight. And I'd like to talk a little bit about some of your endorsements. I also understand that just within the last day or so, you also have obtained a Supreme Court Justice endorsement. Jay Markman, is that correct?
Stephen Markman. Yes, thank you very much. I appreciate that. I'm very honored. He is a very conservative Supreme Court justice, and I was pleased because the interesting part was that he actually came to me, which I am just so flattered, versus me calling. It is very, very unnerving to call a Supreme Court justice, and hence I never did. And so I was just so flattered and humbled, and hopefully that will let the voters know that someone of that level of a judicial position and that much respect is backing me. I'm very, very pleased. Thank you.
Well, interestingly enough, Kate, Jay Markman was, I won't go into any detail. Larry and I don't go into any particular detail about our own personal cases, especially on the air, but Jay Markman was involved.
It's Stephen Markman, if you don't mind my interruption. I apologize.
Well, you're correct.
When you see Jay, that's me. It might be Judge, but it's Justice Stephen Markman.
Oh, you're absolutely right. It does. All these are followed by Jay, so I'm. I assume. Anyway, Jay Markman, on my paperwork, was actually involved in a personal Supreme Court case that had to do with family issues. And that's the other thing that Larry and I were talking about coming into the program is, you're going to handle probate, but there's also a very, very high chance that you may also be handling some family cases, once you're voted in as a judge.
This particular seat, first, before I even go into that, gentlemen, I need to offer an apology earlier when you said, what's that ruckus?
Don't worry about it.
But that was me. My doorbell rang. I had an unannounced visitor, which, again, I'm flattered because it was just somebody from out of the blue who I met once or twice who wanted to pick up 100 lawn signs.
Excellent.
So what you heard was the garage door opening and me waving him saying, yes, take them. But I'm about to be on the radio, so
Well, we can't fault you for that.
I wasn't going to turn down a volunteer because I'm so grateful to all volunteers. Now, what was the question again? Or what was the subject? I apologize.
No, that's okay.
Oh, the probate position. This particular seat, Judge Moore is retiring, and he has been on the bench for 47 years, a long and illustrious career, and there are big shoes to fill, and nonetheless, what his docket is a very large docket because he's been on the bench so long that he has it kind of down to a pat, down to a science, or at least in his ways. And so what the circuit court did was they needed a lot of help because the influx of family cases was just so severe that Judge Moore, they have the power. I'm not sure how it works administratively, but the circuit court can give powers to the probate bench or vice versa, one of the two. Either way, Judge Moore's docket is 50% family and 50% probate, which is interesting because my practice consists of 50% family and 50% probate. So it's exactly what I do. And so, yes, there are several divorce custody support issue cases for this very position, along with all the probate issues as well, and I'd be happy to fill you in on what those issues are unless you have any other questions at this juncture.
Well, Larry, you had a couple of questions going into tonight's show. Did you want to go into some of that with Kathleen?
Well, Dave, I think Kathleen has kind of started to answer a few of them, and Kate, we, again, appreciate you being here. I'm very impressed with just how well you so clearly articulate the duties of that role and what it's supposed to look like. You obviously have experience in that area as an attorney. Can you educate our audience, Kate? What is a probate judge basically responsible for, and why is that such an important role? How does that so immediately impact families?
Absolutely, Larry. And what you said earlier really resonated with me because it's so true. The probate judge literally makes decisions that are immediate to families. You know, most voters think, as you said, senators, congressmen, House of Representatives, governors, well, they do the legislative bills. They're part of the legislature. So they don't make immediate decisions so much. The judges are literally, these probate judges have such an awesome responsibility because they are literally what their decisions impact families permanently. And without the right judge on the bench, there could be some dire consequences. For example, probate covers not only the division of estates through wills and trusts, but it also covers guardianships and conservatorships for the mentally ill, the developmentally disabled, the children who have no guardians or parents. It also covers mental illness dockets, so which is a very, very important role in these days. It covers neglect cases, juvenile cases, adoptions. It is a very wide range of subject matter that affects immediate families immediately. And I am so flattered to be a candidate and to have come in first in the primaries. But at the same time, I have to tell you, it's a little nerve-wracking because the concept of making these decisions on behalf of families is it's such an awesome responsibility. I want to do my best for the people, and I want to really make educated, thoughtful, compassionate decisions because I know that whatever my decisions are when I am elected, if I am elected, that I'm going to affect families, people, humans, not corporations, not banks, not General Motors, but, you know, Sam and Sally Smith, your next-door neighbor and their child, or the gentleman that you see on the street mumbling to himself that all he really needs is medication and the proper direction and perhaps some support from some, you know, county volunteers. It's just an overwhelming responsibility, and it should not be taken lightly. It should not be taken lightly. The voters really need to educate themselves on these candidates, in my opinion.
No question about it. You know, the very population that you're talking about, Kate, what resonates with me is, of course, a social worker, is that these are the very most vulnerable people in our society.
Absolutely, and they need protection. When there's nobody else there to protect them, the courts step in, and nowadays, I don't know if a lot of people are aware of this, but the transfer of wealth in the next 10 years flowing through Oakland County Probate Court because of the higher number of elderly in this county is enormous. And what happens is a lot of these elderly or the developmentally disabled are being taken advantage of by, unfortunately, sometimes their family members, sometimes nursing home facilities, or just anybody in the general public. And that's when the court has to get involved to put in some safeguards to take care of these people and to check and to serve as a check and balance, and often to make decisions of what's in their best interest because they either have no one or the ones around them are not making those proper decisions. So it's almost a surrogate parental role. That's the way I look at it. It's a surrogate parental role. And as all of you who are parents out there, and I know both you and Larry, Dave and Larry are, as am myself, imagine your child being neglected and having nowhere to go. Imagine.
Right.
It's hard to imagine.
Can't even begin to imagine. Right.
And but yet those people exist. And it really is the role of the courts and the judge to step in and say, I will be your surrogate. I will take care of you. I will make sure you are fed and clothed and you have proper medication and you have the right medical treatment, and will try, and it's very difficult now with the budget cuts through the county and the state. And so one thing that I really would encourage if I were elected, and even if I'm not elected, and I still encourage it, is volunteerism. For example, the Child Advocacy Program is terrific. They're very trained professionals who are doing this on a voluntary basis, and they look out for the best interests of the children who aren't being taken care of by, for example, their parents, or they don't have parents. So the way we have to deal with this as a county is kind of like a team. You know that old adage, it takes a village to raise a child? It's somewhat true in the case of these vulnerable. We need everybody to pitch in. The judge has their roles. The courts have their roles. We need services, whether it's state or county provided aid or if it's just volunteer. We need to act as a team for these people. We need to take care of our own so that our environment can be a positive, enlightening, and uplifting environment. Everybody is a person, and they all deserve the same exact rights, whether you're a king or a pauper on the street. And if I am elected, that will be my main goal, is to protect those vulnerable people. It's a very, very scary thing out there today with budget cuts and the economy, and we're going to see more and more mentally ill individuals because of the health care reforms, and people who aren't going to have, or they don't now, or they won't have proper health care coverage, therefore they'll be off their medications, and we know what can happen then. You've seen that, right, Larry?
Oh, my gosh, do we
and
ever. Absolutely.
I truly believe, and I've read some articles, that our mental health population, individuals out there, is going to rise tremendously because of the health care problems and the economy that we have.
Yep.
And it's all
yep.
because of medication or proper services, but we don't have them. So that's going to rise, and that's going to be an issue with the courts.
Right. Quite honestly, Kate, I think it already has started. And
absolutely, I would agree.
What we notice in the field right now is that it's not really even so much the numbers as it is the acuity. People are coming in with higher acuity, with bigger, more immediate and profound, if you will, symptoms. Because, it's one thing when you got a little bit of stress, but when you've lost a job, you've lost a home, you've lost a marriage, you're losing your mind.
Here's an example, and this is a horrible, tragic story, but a very, very dear friend of mine from high school, just a week and a half ago, committed suicide.
He had a wife
and four children, and everyone thought that he was the one that was going to make it. He had a beautiful wife, four beautiful children. The kids were in private school, lovely home, but apparently he had some financial issues that nobody knew about, some bad investments or just the economy. I don't know the specifics, but I do know it was financially related, and the stress was too much, and something snapped in his head, and he took his own life. Now, this is someone who you would never dream of a tragedy like that. And I'm a firm believer that someone who commits suicide has a mental illness, because nobody would choose to be that despondent. It is a form of mental illness or some temporary mental illness. And it's all the stressors. You're absolutely right, the stressors. This wouldn't have happened 10, 15 years ago. But now the economy and all the other stuff that we're seeing around is really causing some serious consequences. And think about this. What if anything should happen to my friend's wife? There's four babies out there without parents. And that's when the courts would have to get involved.
Right.
Because they need protection. So it's a very significant issue that we are facing. And I urge everyone to take it very seriously and to do whatever they can to educate themselves and to be part of the solution. Because we're at the time now where we all have to pull together, every one of us.
Well, you know, and Kate, that's one thing I've always heard you talk about and that I have come to appreciate and value about your candidacy is you do talk as a team player. It's not just a one person show, but that you seem to understand where the resources are and that everybody needs to work together to ensure that families are getting connected to the site. Is that kind of what you see the court's role is, as a as an overseer, or is it more of a
I think the court links people to resources. I think the court is part of the team. Everyone has their role, and you know, the court has its role, the administration has its role, the for example, DHS or Children's Advocacy, they have their role, and everyone has to play their role and work together in a united front to make it work. It's like a clock. If you're missing one cog, it's not going to work properly. You got to keep it well honed and oiled and tuned and work together. Certainly, there's always going to be some conflict, but that's when people need to pick it up and learn how to deal with conflict resolution and remind themselves that they're all working for a common goal.
Right.
And I believe the judge, I don't believe the judge is any more important than any other player in the team. Unfortunately, the image of the outsiders and the everyday people are that judges are so much more important, but I don't believe they are. I believe they are very important, but so is everyone else.
And the most important.
Nobody's more important than the other. It's just the judge that makes the final decision. But the judge can't adequately make a final decision without cooperation from all sources. The judge gets input from the child advocacy or DHS or the volunteers or the family members who come in and testify as to what they've seen and why they need help.
Right.
Without their help, the judge isn't adequately informed to make a proper decision. So, again, I encourage families, when they're before a judge, tell your story. I personally, if elected, will listen, because without facts are everything, and every case is different from the other. It's like a thumbprint. And, you know, I encourage people who are before a court not to be nervous, because it's a very nerve-wracking thing and it's very scary if you've never been in a court before. But I don't want people to be scared. I want them to know that the court is there to help. And we will listen. I personally will listen and try to be part of that solution. And I think people should speak up more in court and say what's on their mind, certainly in a respectful way, but knowledge is power.
Right.
Knowledge is power. Educate the court, because without that education, the court can only make a decision on the facts that are presented to it.
Well,
so,
and Kate, that's a powerful statement, and unfortunately, you know, fortunately, we've got candidates like Kate, Dave, that do listen, and that you know, will take that philosophy, that value system into the court with them. But unfortunately, there's some judges where in some court personnel that has created that perception that, look, you know, your opinion doesn't matter. You come here and we're going to tell you what to do. And I think that's the difference in value and in philosophy. In Kate, and you correct me if I'm wrong, Kate, but I don't think I am, you would be the first to say that, in fact, the most important person in that whole gamut of things is the very people that you're elected to serve.
Absolutely. Everyone needs to I know the role of a judge. It is not an advocate, other than for the unprotected. It is a role. It is to serve. The original purpose is to serve the people and justice.
Right.
People don't serve the judge. The judge serves the people. Technically, judges are employees of the county, employees of the people. And it is our responsibility as judges, if I'm elected, to appreciate that, really digest that, and honor that, and serve the people. That is the judge's role, to serve the people. And in these probate and family cases, especially in family cases, you know, when you have custody issues, and he says and she says, often I've seen in various courtrooms, only one side is heard and the other is not.
Mm-hmm.
Or only the side who has the slickest attorney prevails. Or only the side with the most money wins. And
sure,
it shouldn't be that way. It should be fair and square. Let's talk about what's really important here, and that's the kids. And what do the kids need? They need a mother and a father. regardless of mother and father's potential hatred towards each other, they still love their child. Courts need to listen. They absolutely need to listen to the parties, even if one of the parties is, maybe their personality isn't that great. It's not us to judge somebody's personality. It's us to listen to them. Our job is to listen to them and then think about it from the perspective and eyes of a child. You know, I see a lot of parental alienation cases out there. They need to be able to, the courts need to listen to that because it's a true, real phenomenon. Phenomenon is not the right word. What's the right word?
It's happening.
It's happening. Phenomenon sounds like a positive thing. This is not positive. It happens. I see it. And it's so hard to prove. But I'm telling you, if the court listens and if the party is given the opportunity to speak and it doesn't cost them $100,000 to get to that point, the court will see the light. And so if I'm elected judge, I will listen. And I will do it without – I know how litigators work. I know how attorneys work. That's what I do for a living. Therefore, as a judge – a judge has an ability to cut through the BS and not allow things to get out of hand, because one thing I see is people going broke, their life savings that to spend on a parental alienation case or a custody case. It shouldn't be that way. You shouldn't have to spend your life savings to fight for your kids.
Right.
No doubt about it. And Kathleen, whether it's probate or whether it's child and family related, one of the things that I've heard you say repeatedly, and I think that this particular saying that you use really hits the nail on the head. And I'm going to start it, and you're going to finish it. Stop defining the problem and
be part of the solution.
And I think, as a potential judge, I'm doing backflips, thinking that we could actually have somebody that has the tenacity and the heart, to really earnestly come to the bench and really want to understand the docket, want to understand the personalities involved, want to understand the family dynamics, whether it's a probate court situation or whether it's a custody or parenting time issue. Let's face it, all of us, me, you, and Larry, we've all been in these family situations where we've had to face it and put our lives in their hands to a degree, and these are very important and dramatic decisions that carry forth for years to come, and I know that in talking to you on and off the air, I know that you will strive to make as good a decision as you possibly can from the bench based on the information that you have at hand. And
absolutely.
It sounds as though you are really going to dig, though, to get that information in order to, to be able to go home at night and be able to rest well .
Absolutely, because, not everything is what it looks like at face value. And I have to tell you, not only do you need to know the law to be a good judge, but especially in family and probate law, you need to have experience on your belt so you can see enough of these cases where you do get a sense of different family dynamics and personalities and how things work. But also, and I believe almost equally important, is life experiences. And I have to tell you, I not only practice family and probate law, but, I live in a melded family as well. I've got two stepchildren. And my husband's ex-wife lives down the road, and we all work together for the best interest of my two wonderful and beautiful stepchildren, Max and Julie. And, we have not always made the right decisions, myself included, my husband included, his ex-wife included. We've made mistakes. But over the years, and we've all agreed now that, wow, we've really worked really well together, and we've really fixed those little glitches, and we work so well together, and it's very apparent through the successes of our children. And I see when parents get along together, even though they're divorced, the kids do so much better, emotionally and physically. And I know that's not always the case, and I know sometimes it's virtually impossible. That I understand. But I also like to encourage people to take the high road and don't lose faith and don't lose hope, because you just keep trying, and you just keep trying, and you always speak positively of the other parents, and you always be respectful. And it's hard work, but it is always, you always have to keep in sight that it's the children that are foremost.
Yeah,
not your own person, not your own personal issues. We all have them. We're all human, and we all have our own human foibles. I'm as human as the next person. Trust me.
Well, there becomes a point when you're a parent where you have to die to self. You know, when you have your children, it's not about you anymore.
That's right.
You know, of course, you know, we still have to do for ourselves, and we still have to live our own personal lives. You know, we still have to, you know, find balance personally. But,
oh, absolutely. You don't want to be one of those, what do they call them, helicopter parents now, where they just hover, and they're now, you know, taking them to their first job interview, that type of stuff.
Oh, Lord, yeah.
But, you know, absolutely. And, you know, I'm really excited about this race. And, you know, I really think I just want to win this race, not for my personal successes. I want to win this race because I'm so fired up to be able to help on a larger scale. I just think it would be a tremendous opportunity, and I would not take it lightly. And I'm just so excited to be able to help at that level, and I just really, really want this. I just want to help the people of Oakland County, the children, the vulnerable, the elderly, the mentally ill. I want to be able to use that position as being a judge to get other people involved. Use that influence in a positive way, not go to work, get off the bench at 5, go home and hit the links. I want to be involved after work, after 5 o'clock. That's when I want to go on the streets and work with the people. And I think having that role of judge, it helps get the message out in a more grand scale. And I think that I could use that role to a very positive direction.
We know that you're not afraid to do the work involved in running that race. That's for sure. You've been knocking on a lot of doors, shaking a lot of hands, meeting a lot of people. Tell us, Kate, what's some of the more common problems that you're hearing from the voting base out there? What are they telling you that their main issues are as it relates to the probate court? And what do you see as the voters' main concerns and what they want to see?
Well, I've seen a lot of concern that, you know, they're concerned about experience. Will the next judge have the requisite experience? You know, if you just look at the past history of any court system, there's often court appointments by governors with people with zero experience in that field of law, depending on what judicial position they get. There's a lot of people who get positions because of their family name, yet they don't have the requisite experience necessary. And I do know that's a concern for people. And it's also concerning for people because you hear so much about partisan politics. You know, this congressman candidate, that congressman candidate, this gubernatorial candidate, everyone knows politic party lines. And so they know more about the candidates. Also, the parties, whether it be the Republican Party, the Democratic Party, jump behind those candidates and they can spread the message, their message, because there's more money. Judicial candidates don't get that backing. So it's real hard to spread the message because you don't have that amount of money to put the television ads and the whatever. So people often go into the polls saying, I have no idea to vote for judge. And half the people just vote because they just got to pick one. And they really didn't make an educated vote. They're better off not voting at all. So really one of the biggest concerns is, how do we get the message? How do we educate the voters as to their options, so that they have options, so that then when they go into that booth, they can say, I want to vote for this person because they have the same, you know, moral beliefs or standards or experience level that I feel comfortable with. And so, for example, today you inviting me on this radio show is terrific because we're spreading the message. People are getting to know who I am, so they'll at least be able to say, okay, I do know about a candidate.
Right.
And so I appreciate that very much, guys. It's very appreciative because, again, we don't have that backing of the parties to throw out that money to do all that education. So it's word of mouth, word of mouth, word of mouth. And that's a concern voters have because they don't know who they're voting for.
No question about it. There does need to be more education, and there needs to be more responsibility across the board, quite frankly, that we do get the right people in place to make the kind of positive changes that are needed. But that's an old expression of insanity, Dave, that if you keep doing the same thing over and over and over again and expecting different results, you got to kind of question your own mental health because that's certainly not going to get it done.
Can I tell that to my children?
Let me
Why do you keep doing the same things over and over and over again? You must be mentally ill.
You know, expecting different results.
You must be insane.
I'm just relieved, Kathleen, to know that your kids do it too.
Oh, it's like a I'm a broken record, and I've also morphed into my mother and father, which is really frightening. I find myself mid-sentence saying, oh, my gosh, I'm really saying this out loud.
I know.
I'm really saying this out loud. Wow, I think Mom and Pop really did know what they were talking about.
Yeah, this weekend I can remember sounding just like my mother, who just got off the board, by the way. She said good. But I can remember, I take this deep breath, and I say, Lord, be strength.
Yeah,
my mom used to say it all the time.
Amen.
Well, Dave, raising you in that brood that some of whom I met, I'm guessing that she did say that quite a bit, and
oh yeah,
probably it was warranted.
Well,
my gosh.
Well, Lord knows how my mother and father both made it through with five kids, man.
Oh,
you
God
know.
Bless them.
I don't know, and I was a handful, you know. And all five of us were as different as could possibly be. So they had a real eclectic bunch, I tell you.
I can one up that. My brother in these days and times is unheard of. My brother has eight children.
Oh my god.
They're all about a year
wow.
and a half apart. There's a girl, six boys and a girl.
Oh my
and
god.
And they all range from 4.5 years old to 20.
That's a huge family.
That's amazing. That is true.
In today's society, I think it's terrific. I think it's the greatest thing since sliced bread. And it's so fun to go to their house on Christmas morning.
I'll bet.
To do the old school where the toys are already assembled in the morning versus here's the box and take 5 hours to assemble them on Christmas Day. And it is sheer pandemonium. It is hilarious. It's so much fun. But the best part is I can leave.
Well, Kate, can you do you feel comfortable telling our listening audience a little bit about your childhood growing up and, you know, where you're coming from? Because I know you're local. You know a little bit about Oakland County and what it's like to grow up here in Michigan. And you're a local hometown gal. Tell us more about that.
Well, I am I'm the youngest of four children. I'm the baby. So I was the handful, always trying to, get my word in so somebody would listen to me. And I grew up in Redford Township. My mom and dad are two of the most terrific people in the world. My mother passed away 3 years ago. Rest in peace. All four of us are adopted. I feel very lucky and very special because of that, and I think adoption is one of the most beautiful things in the whole world. One of the most selfless things a person can do on both ends. The giving the child up and the adopting on the same. And so we were raised in a very Catholic household, a very loving household. And after I was born, my parents wanted to adopt more children. They wanted to have a gaggle of us. And they went to Catholic Social Services like they did four times in the past and said, oh, we'd like a baby boy, whatever. And Catholic Social Services said, I'm sorry, Mr. and Mrs. Ryan, there's no children left. Abortion is legal. And so most of the babies are now being aborted. And so we would rather give the children we do have to couples who have no children, and you have four. My father and mother were devastated, of course. And this is where I got the mantra of stop identifying the problem, be part of the solution. Instead of my parents just putting their tail between their legs and complaining, they became part of the solution. My father was one of the founding members of Right to Life of Michigan. And that will give you an idea of the work ethic and the giving back and being part of the solution. That's how I was raised. Then after grade school, I went to St. Valentine Grade School. I went to Mercy High School. I was a good old Marlin, and I enjoyed my times there. And so I know you live out in Farmington, Larry.
You
and,
betcha. Born
and so those are my own stomping grounds. I love driving my 1972 LTD with a Landau top, of course. all around Shiawassee and going to Sorrowsville and sweating and just mucking around with my friends.
You've been to, you and Becky's been to Sorrows Hill and down that sledding hill across. And
it's a blast.
Yeah, that's the best sledding hill in Michigan.
That was so fun. That's when we were in high school, and we'd all go there, and we'd start out being real cool because the girls from Mercy High School would meet up there, and then the boys from Catholic Central or other schools would show up, and we'd all be real cool and dressed kind of cute. And then the first sled ride down that hill, all of our images were off, and we were back to being 10-year-old kids and having a blast.
No,
so I have very fond memories and a lot of good times over there.
And were you forgiving when us Farmington High School Falcon Public School kids showed up?
Oh, I encouraged it. I loved it. I loved the fact going to an all-girls school that I had choices of boys from all over. It was a blast. That's called being an opportunist.
and Dave, I know that Kate is had educated herself in that way because she actually, one thing I've come to value a great deal about Kate is that this is a gal that actually understands football. She actually knows football.
Oh, and you're going to have to bring it up, aren't you?
Well, what was that?
I'm going to make you say it. I'm not saying
well,
it.
Well, you know, Dave, she knows
and
football.
And, yes, I do know football. I love football, but you're still going to have to say it.
I just got to say.
You notice she said football. She's talking about Notre Dame now.
Somebody's got to win. Somebody's got to lose. You know.
But Notre Dame doesn't have to lose every week in a row.
Yeah, ever
since. Throw in the bone, people.
Ever.
We've got a new coach. Indulge us. We would have taken Michigan State. We would have been happy to split the baby. But no, you Michigan State fans and U of M fans had to get greedy, didn't you?
Well, you know, us U of Mers, we need to get a little greedy. I mean, we've had our own plights here the last couple of years. But
you know, I have to say, although I was devastated, I was at that game, Michigan-Notre Dame game. It was an awesome game. But I will say, taking myself out of personalizing it, your quarterback was phenomenal. You deserved to win. If Notre Dame won that game, it would have been a travesty because we would have stolen it. And for my U of M friends, I am very happy for you because you have had a tough row for the last few years.
We truly have. We truly have. But, Kate, let me ask you now, if you do get a vote in the Heisman, are you going to go ahead and vote for Denard Robinson? Are you going to give it to him at this point if it was
absolutely.
The vote was today?
I was at that game, and he did everything except for snap the ball. He punted the ball. I couldn't believe it. I said, oh, my gosh, the quarterback can run, catch, pass, and kick the ball. Couldn't believe it. He was phenomenal. It was a game of a lifetime, and he was very impressive to watch. And since Notre Dame's in the tank, I'm still an ND fan. I'm not a Fairweather fan, but yes, I will definitely vote for Denard Robinson.
All right. We got to hope that that he continues because I got a feeling that as his success goes. So
I was just waiting for him to snap the ball. I was waiting for him to snap the ball and then, kind of like in cartoons, zip around and catch the ball as well. He was a one-man team.
He is a special athlete, there's no question.
Where did he come from? Wasn't he second string last year?
Came from Florida originally, and Tate Forcier, who's also a very good quarterback in
he
a spread offense
spot,
team.
Didn't he?
Well, he didn't get there in time to learn the offense, and what a difference a year can make. Now the kid knows where to throw the ball. He's always been a great runner. And I know we didn't do this program for football, Dave, but my gosh, I told you, this is a woman that knows football. And
I got season tickets, man. I love football. Do you know, hear the funny story. You'll love this. This is my family tradition, too. Nobody in my family is allowed to get married on a football Saturday.
Makes sense to me.
My father just said that's absurd and it's not happening. We've all been to too many weddings where you're peeking your head into the staff smoker's lounge trying to catch the score of the game, saying, why am I here? I want to be at the game.
Absolutely.
So we are, my family, which is a giant, giant Irish Catholic family, literally we have never, out of 41 cousins, no one has had a wedding. And all 41, well, 40 out of 41 are married. And we're all 11-year age gap. And
wow.
Not one of us have had a wedding on a football Saturday.
That's wisdom. That's
wisdom.
True wisdom. Absolutely.
So,
no,
there you go.
I'm
a football fan. I'm a sports fan. I'm a sports fanatic. I love TiVo. I love TiVo.
Well, you know, and we're going to have more conversation to be had because this coming weekend, this Saturday, Michigan is actually playing, and I'll bet, you know, we'll keep it our secret, Kate, but I don't think Dave Taylor even knows that they have a football team. But we will be playing the Indiana Hoosiers. Did you know that Indiana has a football team, Dave? The Indiana Hoosiers.
I
what
know
is a Hoosier?
Hoosier football team, Dave.
No, that's okay, Larry. I know that, you know, you're often touting your team. What is it again? It's Michigan State, I think?
No, that's the University of Michigan, Dave.
I was at that game, too, boys. My husband was doing the happy dance, jumping around me. He's a Michigan State grad, I Notre Dame. I'm thinking 47-yard field goal. We're 3 points ahead. They're going to try to kick a field goal to tie it. It's a young kicker. No way is he going to make it. We're going to win this game. All right. And then what do they do?
Trickery.
They were, I couldn't believe it. So, yes, my husband's very happy. He gets to fly the state flag on our front porch for the whole year. But he hasn't been able to find it yet. I don't know where it went.
Now, that's a marriage.
He turned 50 this year, and I said, you know, those ARP letters in the mail, maybe you're, I don't know where your flag is. I don't know. Maybe you misplaced it. Don't know. Sorry.
Well, thank goodness, Larry, because I was feeling like, you know, gosh, now we got him pointing us on this this great other side of the hill.
Oh, my gosh, I'll tell you. Yeah, Dave just turned 50. And
I know. Happy birthday.
Thank you.
We're all kind of stepping on holy ground here.
50 is a new 30.
Hey, as long as we're still stepping on ground on the top side, it's all good.
That's
what I say. Every day I'm breathing is a good day.
No question. That's waking up on this side of the dirt is better than the alternative, right?
Better than the alternative, absolutely.
Yeah, it would really be disturbing if you woke up on the other side of the dirt.
Yeah, you know, and there's been a couple of times I've woke up spitting dirt out of my mouth. But, you know, I mean, it's all about the comeback, right? We're all making comebacks here.
Oh, you're hilarious.
I'll tell you what, we're going to wind things down for the night. We're actually have almost completed an entire hour. It goes by
really?
So quick. Kathleen Ryan on the line, because, Kathleen, you were so much fun.
Oh, thanks. So are you. I really appreciate it, and I enjoy talking to you both. It's a treat. It's an absolute treat.
Well, I'll tell you what, you know, fun and articulate and expressive and appreciated and obviously very humble. And we want to give you, you know, a minute or two to talk directly to our listeners about your campaign, why people should, you know, go on election day or right now there's a lot of empty ballots out there. Why should people be voting for Kathleen Ryan?
Well, I think that it's always uncomfortable to say why people should vote for me.
Well, sure.
I come from a humble background. However, since you asked, I truly believe that the people should vote for me because I have the legal experience, I have the life experience, I have the compassion and the empathy. I understand human foibles, and I'm also fully aware that I too am fully human. And with that knowledge, it's commitment to being a better person and helping others. And I assure you that if elected, I will always remind myself and know that I'm here to serve the people, the voters, and their families. And again, I truly do have the experience both in the law and in life. My opponent is a fine, young, promising attorney, but she has only been practicing law for 5 years, less than 5 years. It hasn't even been 5 years. She's not even constitutionally qualified to be a judge today. She will be sometime in December. But that's why I believe I should be elected the next Oakland County probate judge.
Well, I think that's about as concise as it gets. And you know, they put out there in the Kathleen Ryan style, because, again, we appreciate the fact that, you know, that you put it out there in plain language, but you do it in such a way that it's real, Kathleen. And that's one of the things that we really appreciate about you is that, you know, you're one of us. You know, you're a parent. You know, you're a volunteer member of the community. You know, you've been part of the process for quite some time. What, been practicing for over 14 years now as an attorney, right?
That's correct, and exclusively in probate and family. My life has been dedicated to helping families and helping protect the vulnerable. That has been my life's career, my adult life. That is what I've done, and I will continue to do that, whether I'm elected as judge or not. It is my life goal, and I also believe it's my responsibility. I've been blessed with so many fortunes that it would be a travesty of justice if I didn't pay it forward. As trite as that phrase is, it's so true. I need to pay it forward, and that's what I intend to do.
Well, and we wish you the best of luck with that. I know that the election's coming up on you know, the first Tuesday in November, so we want to encourage all of our listeners to get out and you know, vote for the candidate of your choice. And I would imagine for probate judge in Oakland County, I would imagine a lot of people that are listening to and downloading this program are going to find favor with Kathleen Ryan.
And I appreciate it, and I would love it if everybody, I know people, if they want to help, you don't need money to help. All you need to do is get on your computer and spread the word. Let's go viral. Vote for Ryan.
Well, Kate, if you can let our audience know one more time, what is that website that they can check your candidacy out a little further and read more on it?
It's www.electkathleen, K-A-T-H-L-E-E-N, Ryan, R-Y-A-N.com. If you go to that website, you also can contact me directly. There is an email link, and I personally respond to those emails, not a campaign committee or crew. It is generally done. My campaign committee wanted to do that, and I said, no. These are people are emailing me. They need to hear from me. I don't need to have standard answers. So if you want to contact me, you can contact me, and I will respond. It also has a host of other information, a list of my endorsements. It's constantly being updated. So please go on the online and educate yourself and contact me if you'd like, and I'd be more than happy to respond. Be kind, though, and give me at least 48 hours. I try to do it within 24 hours, but I'm a little busy these days. So.
Well, you're coming into the throes of the campaign. That's certainly understandable, Kathleen. You know, I know you're out there working daily hard to gain the vote and gain confidence of the you know, the folks out there that are going to be, you know, voting in a new probate judge. And again, we wish you the best on your endeavors. I know you got you know, just over 30 days
That's,
you know,
right,
until that election.
I got to tell you, though, even though it's hard work, it is so fun. I am having an absolute blast going to places I never would have gone to, meeting people I never would have met. It's just so cool. I am having just an absolute ball, and I wouldn't do it any other way. I'm just really enjoying my time, win or lose. I'm having a really good time, and I think I'm helping support the cause of giving back to the community, even as a candidate, because I'm spreading the message that that's what people should do. And That's a positive thing. So even if I'm not, if I don't prevail as the winner, I'm not going to think that way. But even if I don't, I feel that I've been making a positive change, and I will continue to do so. So thanks so much, guys. I really, really appreciate it.
Our pleasure. And you know, certainly take that passion to the street, and you know, go out and get that vote, Kathleen. And you know,
I'm doing the best, living the dream, man, living the dream.
So we're going to close out things tonight. Again, you know, thanks for bringing a lot of value to our program, Kathleen. And you know, we'll look forward to talking with you directly following the election on November. And again, best of luck to you.
Great. Thanks so much. And I will be at the Mom and Dad's Club meeting in Waterford on Saturday, this coming up Saturday, October 2nd.
October the 3rd.
Oh,
yep.
October 3rd, 2nd, whatever Saturday is.
Let me double check that. I just had the website up.
Let's see. Let me look at the calendar.
I'm there. I got it right here. It is
October 2nd.
Yep. It is October the 2nd. And, in fact, we're going to give out some information on that. But, yeah, I know that Dads and Moms of Michigan sincerely appreciate your support. I've been to past meetings. And, you know, there's a lot of folks that are dealing with some very disturbing issues that are very appreciative to have, you know, that legal expertise that you and some other folks are able to bring to those meetings. And, you know, this is an opportunity to meet a candidate for judge that's going to be at Dads and Moms of Michigan meeting on October the 2nd, which is being held in the Waterford Eagles Club, which is on Highland Road. You can go to dadsandmomsofmichigan.org, and right on the initial homepage, there's information and a map, in fact, a link to a map to how to get to that meeting, and it's completely free. And, you know, not only could the price be right, but my gosh, you can't get any better information from folks like Kathleen Ryan that are going to be at a meeting like this. So
and I'd be happy to answer anybody's questions about their own cases, not about my campaign, about their own situation or perspective. I'm more than happy to share whatever insight I may have to help sort out some of your questions or issues. So I will be there, and I'd be more than happy to field any questions.
Yeah, and that's what we always appreciate about you, Kathleen, is that you are always willing and very capable at that to you know, be sharing with folks your own experiences and any particular legal advice pertaining to their own cases, and that's invaluable, absolutely invaluable.
Well, I'm looking forward to it, and I encourage all your listeners and online viewers to go to that meeting. Check it out. It's an awesome, awesome service and informational meetings, and I encourage everyone to go. I was very impressed the first time I went, and I am very, very pleased that I did.
Yeah, in fact, yours truly. I'll be pretty much facilitating that meeting, and we're going to have, like we did last time, we have a keynote speaker. Last time it was our own Larry Heron, the parent coach, talking about parental alienation, which we talked about briefly.
Oh, really?
How'd
that go?
Oh, excellent. Excellent. Larry, in my opinion, he's the foremost expert in parental alienation issues, and he knows, he has such a way of articulating those issues, and, you know, from a mental health professional's standpoint, has a great perspective on it, and is able to articulate it in such a way that people not only can understand it, but they appreciate it, because many people that are out at these meetings, of course, are experiencing the firsthand, and they're looking for tools to take back with them to be able to, you know, not necessarily combat it, you know, parental alienation, but also to be able to, you know, wallow through the aspects of it, because it's something that there's not necessarily, and Larry will tell you, there's not necessarily an instant cure to it.
Well, I know you're trying to wrap it up, but I wanted to add one thing, and I forgot to mention this. When in court, in these cases, I encourage people, and the courts really, really appreciate it, mental health professionals such as yourself, Larry, are such a valuable tool in those very type of cases, because often the parent who knows that there's alienation going on can say it until their face is blue, but the alienator is so clever and it's so masked that the courts can't really see it or people won't listen, that one way to really, really get down to the bottom of what's going on is if a child's exhibiting issues and if you have a family counseling session or one-on-one sessions with the child, that mental health professional, if properly trained, such as yourself, Larry, you'll be able to pick up on it.
Yep.
Without anybody even telling the child that's happening. You can pick up on it just by the things the child says. And then that professional can report to the attorney or to the courts as to what they think is going on, and that's when the aha, light bulb over the head moment happens.
Yep.
Because to have a neutral professional, and that's what you are, Larry, you're out for the best interest of the child,
no
to be able to identify that and tell the court what they've observed, that is so helpful. It is so helpful.
You know, Kate,
I just wanted to mention that. I really wanted to mention that, and that's one thing I also would encourage, because of budget cuts and whatnot, we need people to start utilizing therapists and things of that nature, because you're going to have to start curing your own problems because the court docket's getting so jammed. So if you utilize people like Larry, it will be do you a world of good.
No question about it. It's important to understand what it looks like. I keep hearing that parental alienation is difficult to prove, and I think that, you know, from a lot of lawyers' perspectives and judges' perspectives, because of the way the process is in having evidence and being
that's
able
what
to,
the difficult part is,
right,
is the legalities,
you know,
not the identifying that it's happening.
Exactly.
It's the process and the system, and what's happening
yep.
is you're going to find a host of attorneys. They shy away from parental alienation cases because
right.
they know they've got an uphill battle in the courts. They have to file the motions. They have to have an evidentiary hearing. The parties don't have a lot of money. They want to be paid.
Right.
And it's a shame because it really isn't that hard to prove.
It really
isn't. It's not hard to prove.
It's really not. And,
I don't believe
quite,
it is. I've had
frankly,
several cases. It's not hard to prove, but you need to find the right attorney who's
exactly.
willing to take it to the max, follow
yep.
through, and not charge an arm and a leg, and someone that does it because they truly believe in helping this family. And there are attorneys out there like that.
Yep. There's attorneys
and that's why
out there
people say
recognize...
it's hard to prove. It's not hard to prove.
It's recognizing what it is, and like you say, Kate, when it's happening, and I know you understand it, I know you recognize it, and more, I think that judges are beginning to recognize it, and you're right, getting a therapist that understands it, getting an attorney that understands it.
Well, the therapist can help be
often
the therapists serve as a great tool to
yep.
for parenting time coaches, for example,
yep.
because
absolutely.
The court's hesitation is, okay, fine. There's parental alienation. Now what do I do? Well, I don't want to, you know, get rid of the parent who's alienating because that's going to hurt the child too because the
sure.
child still needs that parent.
Yep.
And the court can't sit down with the parent and say, now you need to parent like this. You can't say bad things about, you know, that's not the court's role. So that's when you utilize a parenting coach or a mental health professional to say, look, I see the parental alienation happening. I'm not going to take that child away from you because that's just as damning to the child. But what I am going to do is keep you on a short leash, and we're going to have reviews, and we're going to come back every 3 months or something and see how the parenting time went. And I'm going to appoint this person, for example, Larry, to meet with the family once a week or the child once a week. That keeps the parent on in check because they know they're being monitored. And
bring
then
some
the parent
accountability to the table. Yep.
That's right. And so that's really what needs to happen because you can't get rid of the parent. But on the same note, you can't leave the situation the way it is. It needs to be fixed. There needs to be a solution. And that solution is co-parenting and working with professionals who can help give you the tools and skills that are requisite to cope with those situations.
Right.
And the judge can't do that. That's where the volunteer services, the professionals, the mental health professionals, that's where those roles come in, and they are so important. And judges and courts should use them as often as they are able.
Right.
Well, I think that's an important point, Kathleen, is that, you know.
Again, part of the team,
know,
the whole team thing.
It is, and I see a number of instances, because I've observed a number of court cases where, for example, you know, a judge, you know, sometimes comes across as a personal expert in areas when they should be leaning on experts themselves, you know, and gleaning that information from the right areas, you know, not
absolutely
putting their own...
The judges make the decisions, but they also need to be fed the right information. And for example, let's put it in different terms. If you have a big corporate litigation, let's say it's a trust litigation, and there's companies within companies, and we need to know the value of, you know, AMZ business. Well, the judge doesn't know that. The judge isn't an accountant or a business
right.
value. Evaluator. And then that evaluator looks at the business, looks at the numbers, and then reports back to the court and says, this is what I determine the value of this business to be. It's no different in a family situation. You get the professional to say, this professional is going to check out the situation. They're trained in that area. Then they'll report to me. I will then follow up with questions and such. And then the judge makes a decision. So it's no different than utilizing a CPA to evaluate taxes or something like that. So it's not as foreign of a concept as people may think. It's just it has to deal with emotions and people, and there's no hard figures or hard numbers or it's not tangible. So people think it's just so impossible, and it's not. It's really not impossible at all.
Quite frankly, Kate, when you all you really need to do is talk to those parents, and the minute you hear one say, you know, I need to be primary and that other one needs to be secondary. And why? Well, there's really not a rational reason why. You pretty much got a red flag flying pretty
quickly. Right, unless there's
quickly.
A reason. There's drugs and alcohol involved, or there's,
right.
you know, a history of, you know, being absent often or things of that nature. But in general, no, there's no primary parent. In fact, what I'm encouraging people to do in divorce judgments now, a lot of people are doing it, is we don't even use the word custody.
Right.
You just say the parties will share joint, because as you know, there's legal custody and then there's physical custody. Legal custody is making joint decisions on behalf of the child. In 99.9% cases, everybody has joint legal custody. But then it comes to physical custody, and that's when you get in that whole muckety-muck primary residency versus secondary, et cetera. Avoid it all. Just say the parties are going to have joint legal custody, and this is how parenting time is going to be.
Right.
And then nobody's fighting over this child like it's a possession.
You got it.
And it also is easier. Thinking. It's easier for certain parents to, I think a lot of times parents don't want to say the other party has custody because it makes them feel like they're a bad parent. Or vice, they don't want to give up custody because then they feel like a bad parent. So you take away that whole emotional aspect. And you say, we're sharing custody. We're raising our children together. The only difference is we're not married anymore.
Co-parenting.
That's right. And it's very important. Fathers are not more important than mothers, and mothers are not more important than fathers.
Well,
it is no longer 1943.
Well, and look at the impression that it leaves on the children, too. I mean, all of a sudden, you know, especially in older children, when there's a divorce that occurs, the children are seeing these dynamics play out, and then all of a sudden, mom or dad ends up as a secondary role in the children's lives, and they're trying to sort it out.
And it's not even their fault. It's not even their fault. They had no choice. I agree 100%. And my husband and his ex-wife have shared custody, and I'm telling you, it's wonderful to see. My husband, and this is coming from the wife, that, you know, it's wonderful to see my husband and his ex-wife literally drive in the same car together on occasion, taking one of the kids to or from a sporting event. It's the kids are so darn happy to see
the
three of us,
the
three of us sitting there in the bleachers, yakking it up about whatever, getting along, cheering for them on the field. Those kids just have the biggest smiles on their faces because they know that after that game, they have to pick, should I walk to mom or should I have to walk to dad? They know
right.
that they can walk right to where both mom and dad are sitting, and they don't have to make a choice.
They don't have to choose. That's right.
And, okay, and let me tell you, sometimes we grit our teeth because we're not getting along, but you do it anyhow.
You do it
period.
Anyway. You made mention earlier that it's hard work. And it is hard work, but you know what? It's good parenting. And that's what it's all about.
Yep.
If you want to be a good parent, that's what you do. And,
yep.
And, you know, quite frankly, at the end of the day, you can say, you can battle back and forth about who is the worst spouse, who's the worst person, who's this, who's that. But at the end of the day, if you're going to be a good parent, then you're going to do that for your children. You're not going to make them choose. You're not going to compete.
And whoever said that you have to be a good spouse to be a good parent?
That's true. It's very
true.
They're
not necessarily one and the same.
No, they're not at all related.
There are a lot of people that are just really bad married people. They just are. It just doesn't work for them. And
yep,
I'm not
right.
judging it. I'm not saying yay or nay. I personally love marriage, but I'm just saying that doesn't mean they're bad people. It doesn't mean they're bad parents. I know a lot of people that are really bad spouses, but they're wonderful parents.
Yep.
And I think people need to remember that they're two separate issues.
Completely different.
And that's the bottom line. They're just totally different issues. They're not the same.
Yep.
So when you have a scorned wife or a scorned husband, which again, I'm not a proponent of, cheating on spouses, but it happens. But often you see the scorned wife or the scorned husband saying, well, they cheated on me. They can't have the kids. What? I don't see the connection. Doesn't make any sense to me.
Right.
Doesn't mean they're a bad parent.
Two wrongs don't make a right. Yeah.
Right. So people need to remember, separate the adult issues from the raising of the children issues.
Yep.
You know, quite honestly, as I know you guys understand, your kids could care less that you've been cheated on. They really don't care because all they care about, kids are selfish that way, and they need to be, but quite frankly, all they care about is their own relationship with each of those parents. They really don't want to concern themselves with what the relationship between the two of you were. They want their own. And they
what
do.
Did you
they
think
should.
About when you were a kid? Baseball
Absolutely.
And school and girls in your case and boys in my case.
Yep.
I never once thought about my parents' relationship. Ew.
Didn't want to go there.
No, it was mom and dad. And you know what? Half the time they weren't together, so they could have been divorced. So I didn't care. I cared about my mom and I cared about my dad, period. That's it. Not
right.
the two of them together. That was an icky thought. So I just didn't.
Right.
You don't think about adult issues as a child. So don't
right.
put those issues in a child's life.
Well, and
That's
kids
right.
are naturally narcissistic anyway. It's all about them, you know. So
absolutely.
That's all fine, you know, because, they know nothing else. I mean, they're growing and they're developing and, you know, and it's our job as parents to help facilitate that balance and to help them feel comfortable and content and loved and giving them an enriching atmosphere, you know. And
teaching them how to be other-centered. Because they are naturally narcissistic, it's up to the parents to teach them how to be other-centered. What's the best way to teach a child how to be other-centered but to get along and think of your ex-spouse?
Right.
You're teaching them, look, I am thinking about your mother or about your father, even though we're still not married. I'm teaching you how to be other-centered. So that alone is a lesson, a very important lesson to teach
That's
children.
That's a very teachable moment, isn't it?
It sure is, because kids are naturally self-centered. So you teach them to be, it's up to the adults to teach them how to be other-centered. If the adult is going to engage in parental alienation or selfish behavior because they're feuding with their ex-spouse, you're not doing your child any service. You're not teaching them. You're just teaching them how to be more selfish.
Right.
So it's very important to remember that. Without sounding like I'm pontificating, which apparently I just felt like I was, and I'm not.
Well, you know, we'd like to think that we could, you know, hold hands and sing kumbaya with our formers, but, you know, let's face it, that's why they're formers. So
that's right.
We have these difficult communication times, and that's normal, and that's to be expected, but it's like you expressed.
Civility and respect is all that is required.
If respect your kid. Or they love your kid enough to respect the other parent is what it comes right down to. And your kid
right.
will love, you know, it will pay off in dividends with your child.
And maybe not immediately, but it does happen. It will happen in time. Trust me.
Oh yeah, I know. I'm living proof of it too. I, you know, give due respect to the child's parent. It definitely, you know what? At the very least, you can look yourself in the mirror and know that you know you're doing the right thing. You're doing the right thing. So,
well, I think
I'll
what the two of you are doing is terrific. And now our radio show, I'm sorry, I'm the one that caused this, has now been an hour and a half. Can you believe it?
Well, it's been exactly, I can tell you as producer, it's been exactly an hour and 20 minutes and 2 seconds as we speak. But that's
wow.
All good. I let it go because it was good dialogue. We got into parental alienation. We got into, you
mea
know.
Culpa. I apologize. I'm a talker. The Catholic nuns used to tape my mouth with duct tape, of course, for talking too much in class.
Your knuckles are still red from that ruler, aren't they?
You betcha. I'm a hand model, I am not.
But I'll tell you what, again, Kathleen, thanks so much for coming on the program and allowing us the opportunity to talk to you further about your campaign. And we know that, at the end of the day, that the right thing is going to happen. And certainly wish you well on everything going forward from here.
Thanks so much. I really appreciate it, gentlemen. You have a wonderful evening, and I will see you on Saturday.
All righty.
You got it. Take care, Kate.
All right, you too. Bye-bye.
All right, Larry. Again, as we're talking about Saturday, that is October the 2nd. Got going into October, man. Almost got another year by us here.
It is going quick, isn't it? It truly is.
And again, if listeners want to go to dadsandmomsofmichigan.org on the homepage, you can get the information about that free seminar. And actually going to be talking about how to navigate the legal system. And your family matters. We're going to have a family law there who's actually a board member, Michael Thomas of Dads and Moms of Michigan. And in addition, judge candidate for probate court, Kathleen Ryan, who's going to be attending. And again, Kathleen Ryan can be contacted on her website, which is KathleenRyan.com. And you know what, Larry, another fun-filled Biff radio program. Enjoyed having Kathleen on tonight, and look forward to coming back on here every Tuesday night and talk about family issues, because it's you and I live it, Larry. I mean, these are important issues.
They truly are, Dave. It's a passion. You know, we just try to educate, and we try to keep networks in place. And hopefully what we're doing is, again, leaving the appropriate legacy for our children and for others to be better parents. And because it really is about the kids. At the end of the day, it's about raising good and right kids to create a better and right society. And they're our future. We got to do it right. And I know that if you didn't love your daughter and I didn't love my son to the extent that we do, we probably wouldn't need to be doing this. We could find other things to do with our time, but they're truly the reason for the season, the fuel of cause for us. And I couldn't think of any better way to spend a Tuesday night, other than maybe DJ and I jetting off to Montana and riding them horses somewhere. But other than that, I'm happy to be here.
Absolutely. Well, and it wouldn't be a show without Larry Heron, the parent coach. Again, I have a great appreciation for Larry, the fellow who, in my opinion, is better than Dr. Phil, and he's got hair.
Dave, I don't care to compete with Dr. Phil or anybody else, but I appreciate that that hair comment.
I don't think you're competing with Dr. Phil. In fact, I don't know. I think Dr. Phil takes a back seat to Larry Heron, the parent coach.
Just appreciate
and
having
him. And if he doesn't
like
what I got to say, I got an email address. He can write me and complain
maybe,
about.
Maybe he could come on the show. I'd love to have Dr. Phil on the show.
I actually like Dr. Phil. I give him a hard time because it gives me an opportunity to. Give you kudos and talk about how much hair he doesn't have. But other than that, You know, Larry, you know, we have a lot of fun on here now and again with guests like Kathleen Ryan for probate judge, and you know,
she's a great guest.
Not only is Kathleen experienced and you know, has the right stuff to take the bench, but she's a hoot. She's a lot of fun. She's a family woman. You know, she's very, very family centered, and that's the type of person that we need as a judge in Oakland County.
Yep, no question about it. No question.
Well, my friend, we're gonna sign off for tonight. We got right around an hour and a half of broadcast time tonight, which is a little bit longer than we used to do. A two-hour show for those that are listening, and about a year ago or so, we were doing a two-hour program. I don't know how we made it through with 2 hours, but with guests like Kathleen Ryan, it's not very hard.
It's not difficult. Nope. She's a hoot. No question.
But, well, we'll sign off for tonight and next Tuesday. God blessings, and we'll see you then.
Good night.